Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. When you call 911 here in Ohio, there's a decent chance a volunteer firefighter will be the one who responds. About 70% of Ohio's fire departments are staffed by volunteers. And they do more than keep us safe. They keep local costs down. But the number of volunteer firefighters is dwindling, service calls are rising, and the folks in charge say their crews are, quote, hanging on by a thread. We're diving into the world of volunteer firefighters this hour, and we're starting at the national level with Steve Hirsch. He's the chair of the National Volunteer Fire Council. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you, Anna. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
America has about a million firefighters, and 670,000 of them are volunteers. That was a stunning statistic to me. And I'm hoping you can explain a little bit about the history of volunteer departments and how we got to where we are today.
Sure. Well, the history of our volunteer firefighting operation starts with Ben Franklin. It starts in Pennsylvania. He was the first, set up the first volunteer fire company. So we have our roots that go back a long way. In rural America, which is where I'm at today, in rural Northwest Kansas, there simply isn't call volume that would justify having career firefighters here. And so you'll find huge swaths of the United States are protected by volunteer firefighters, people who leave their jobs and leave their homes and leave the events that they're going to, they leave church to go help out their neighbor when they need help the most.
So a lot of these departments are in more rural parts of the country. Is that fair to say?
Well, yes, although you have a number of volunteer fire departments in metropolitan areas. There's volunteer fire departments on Long Island in New York. There's volunteer fire departments in the Beltway around Washington, D.C. So primarily they would be more rural, but there are some in some major metropolitan areas as well.
So in those major metropolitan areas, do they support their professional firefighters in the area? Is that kind of how that shakes out?
Well, we're all professional firefighters. Okay. I know there's a difference between career and volunteer, but volunteers act just as professionally as any other firefighter.
But I apologize. That was probably the wrong word. So we'll say career and volunteer.
I wanted to make sure I pointed that out. Because certainly my volunteers are every bit as professional as anybody that's getting a paycheck for it. And it really doesn't matter whether you're getting a paycheck. It matters how you respond, whether you respond in a professional manner, in a competent manner. And, you know, frankly, on the whole, the volunteer fire service does a good job with that.
And volunteers don't just respond to fires, right? They can take all kinds of 911 calls.
Right. We've generated into an all hazards type organization. You know, we're doing high angle, low angle, swift water, confined space, responding to EMS calls, which of course account for about 85% of the call volume for most fire departments across the United States, along with fires and car extrications, you name it, we're involved in it.
So what kind of training goes into becoming a volunteer firefighter?
Well, that, you know, Anna, that is going to vary in terms of educational opportunities for firefighters and how they get to be a firefighter from state to state and locality to locality. For example, I believe there in Ohio, there actually are some mandatory minimum requirements for being a volunteer firefighter. Here in Kansas, where I sit, and Nebraska, which I can almost see from my desk, there are no requirements. Not from a state level, but certainly there are local requirements that a department might have.
And you guys are doing this around usually a day job, correct? This is obviously not your full-time employment because you don't get paid.
That's right, Anna. We don't get paid for what we do, but we do get a lot of rewards for what we do because we're helping out neighbors when they need help the most. And that's pretty rewarding.
How do you guys then buy your trucks, your gear, your hoses, your equipment?
Again, a cookie cutter approach probably doesn't work real well across the United States. You'll find that east of the Mississippi, a lot of fire departments are subscription fire departments where people pay dues to belong and to get fire protection. Those folks are out doing pancake feeds and chicken barbecues, you name it, to raise money to make sure that they have enough money to provide protection. On the west side of the Mississippi, where I'm at, we tend to be almost exclusively tax supported. So the local communities raise funds in terms of taxes, and that's how we are able to buy our equipment. Frankly, there are places in this nation where volunteer firefighters not only give up their time, but they're actually buying their own gear.
So when did you first start to think that there was a problem with recruitment that might be reaching a national scale?
Well, clearly we know when we look at the numbers, we've got an issue there. And I believe there was an article in one of the Columbus papers that showed about a 6.5% decline in volunteer firefighters in the state of Ohio in the last 3 to 4 years. And, we know it's an issue, although, again, no cookie cutter. For example, I'm in a county of 2,500 people. The entire county has 2,500 people and about 140,000 cattle. We cover 900 square miles. We're the only fire department. We don't have any trouble recruiting. I have 105 volunteer firefighters out of 2,500 people. And there are fire departments across the nation that do a really good job at recruiting volunteer firefighters. But we know that there are some places that are having some issues. And why is that? Why are they having issues with recruitment? Well, you know, my dad started in this fire service when I was a year old. And at that time, mom stayed home and took care of the kids. And so dads were able to go off and do training and attend fires and all sorts of other incidents that they might be called to. That's not reality today. We have two income households. And so it's not exclusively a male dominated field anymore. And, we have a lot of demands for our time. I often say that if my parents had been at school more than one day a week, it was because I was in trouble, most likely. But today, if you've got two or three kids, you could be at school every day of the week, including on Sundays for school events. So there's a lot of demands for time. And then the reality is a lot of small communities have declined in size. There are not a lot of young people there. And so it gets difficult to recruit when you don't have a recruitment pool. A lot of those communities don't have a lot of jobs, so the younger people, if they are there, they're working out of town and they don't have the ability to respond. I'm fortunate to live in a very rural, remote area where people live and work basically in the same community.
Yeah, because firefighting, regardless of whether it's volunteer or career, it is a physically demanding job. I kind of make it akin to being a professional athlete. Like, there's a real hard end to that career as you get older.
There is, Anna, there is an end, I suppose, although I will tell you that a few years back, one of my firefighters was 93 years old. Now, he was not responding to calls to pull hose in a building, but he could drive a fire truck, and he lived in a rural area where he knew every gate and every fence and every hole in every pasture, and he was physically able to respond. I know that maybe sounds a little shocking to people, and I certainly wouldn't recommend sending a 93-year-old inside a burning structure, but there are still opportunities for people to volunteer. By way of that, I want to say that we need to be a little more aggressive at trying to recruit people that maybe are non-traditional. For example, we need to find the folks that are truck drivers who are retired, who would be willing to drive a fire truck, but maybe not willing to do interior fire attack. We need to be recruiting people who are professional photographers who could come and photograph our scenes so that we can use those for training purposes. And obviously, you know, there are a lot of places we've got to get better about recruiting women and minorities too.
I think that's a really good point. I wouldn't have thought that there'd be a person in their 90s driving the fire truck, but goes to show you what I know. but so then what is the National Volunteer Fire Council doing to recruit more volunteer firefighters?
Well, what we're doing to recruit volunteer firefighters is a lot of things. One of the things we're doing is we set up the MakeMeAFirefighter.org website. People can log into that. They can type in their zip code. They can be connected to fire departments in the area that are looking for help. And that's pretty important. And we're also providing customized materials to fire departments so that they can go out and do recruitment campaigns. New York, for example, has a great statewide program at doing recruitment of firefighters. Your own fire marshal, Kevin Reardon, that's one of the first things that pops up on their website is the Make Me a Firefighter emblem. So, we're doing lots of things to try and make sure that we not only recruit new firefighters, but we also have to keep in mind that if we can retain firefighters and not lose them, that's also going to help ease the pain.
And we also want to hear from you this hour. Are you a volunteer firefighter? Is that something maybe you did for a while, but life got too complicated? If you have a story about being a volunteer firefighter, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. I want to shift our conversation, Steve, and talk a little bit about some of the impacts of losing volunteer firefighters, because it's not as simple as going to the community and saying, hey, we need to raise taxes or we need to fundraise more to pay these guys so we don't lose them. But have firehouses closed from a lack of recruits?
Sure, firehouses have closed in this nation because they don't have enough people to staff them. We hear about it all the time. Is it a major thing? Probably not terribly major yet, but it certainly could be that way. We know that there are fire departments that have closed, that then the neighboring fire departments have to pick up the slack, and that just puts a little more stress and strain on them. But from a I appreciate the plug there for other people to volunteer as well, because that's what we got to do. We have to spread this message that of how important it is to have volunteer firefighters in our communities. Do you want to be waiting for an hour for a fire truck to show up when your house is on fire? Do you want to be hanging upside down in the seat belt when the rescue squads can't get there within 45 minutes? Do you want to be having a heart attack and the ambulance can't get there because they're short staffed for 30 minutes? I think not. And I think the reason to do that is that we have to make this personal for people. It may be them that need that ambulance or that fire truck or that rescue squad to come help them someday. So why not give back to the community? Why not be the person that's going to make a difference in somebody's life that day?
Yeah, and I think, I used to live out west. I've lived in like Idaho, Nevada, Colorado, places where if the local volunteer fire department were to close, you could be 30, 40, 100 miles away from the next station. Like sometimes I think when we talk about this at a national scale, folks east of the Mississippi don't realize how desolate parts west of the Mississippi can be.
It's very wide open out here. I have areas with 900 square miles in my county. I have areas that it can take 30 minutes right now for me to get to. How am I going to have a neighbor cover that for me? It's just going to add to the response time. So, again, for people who, are hearing this, find your local fire department. Log on to makemeafirefighter.org. Find some place that you can volunteer. Like I said, we're not always looking for people who want to run inside a burning building, although that is an important part of our mission. We're looking for all sorts of people who can contribute lots to the mission of their local fire department,
Are you ever look
including you.
Are you ever looking for clerical staff or help in like office work?
Sure. There are lots of things that can be done. We have to do fire incident reporting. We need help with that. We're always on the outlook for grant opportunities. And so, people who have those skills would be extremely valuable to a local fire department.
The pandemic was hard for a lot of us and for a lot of businesses and industries. How did it impact volunteer firefighting?
It's a good question about how COVID affected us. And again, I think there's probably no cookie cutter on that. I know at least in my fire department, for about 6 weeks, we went to having meetings by Zoom. We actually recruited people during that period of time. There were people I know, the NVFC has a firefighter support program. We were actually giving money out to volunteer firefighters who had lost their jobs, were not able to work. It was pretty gratifying to see some of the comments on those applications that these folks, since they weren't working, they were able to give more time to their local fire department. That's just the spirit of the fire service. We'll take and do a lot with very little, and we'll give of our time, but we'll also give our money. So I know that in some places COVID probably did have some impact. It certainly had impact on those fire departments that were raising money through pancake feeds because they just couldn't have those. Keep in mind too that I live out in the western part of the United States where COVID didn't have the impact that it did in some of the more populated areas.
Yeah. And we're going to drill down. We actually have Kevin Reardon, our state fire marshal, coming up next. So he can talk a little bit about how things have been going in Ohio. But I did want to ask before our time together is done, let's say I don't have time and don't have the skills or maybe the physical capacity to be a volunteer firefighter. I assume you're always happy to take donations.
Yeah, we are certainly always happy to take donations. And that's not necessarily just donations of money. You know, one of the main killers of firefighters is heart ailments. And we have found over time that if we can hydrate our firefighters in the field, we can keep them alive. So there isn't a fire department out there, a fire station out there that wouldn't accept a case of water from somebody or frankly, a dozen cookies sometimes would go a long ways. But you know, I don't want people to think that, oh, I don't have the time. If that's the premise that we operate on, none of us really have that much time. I'm the district attorney in my county.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, I take off. I've taken off out of court to go help people who needed my help. So they need to not be thinking about their own time, but thinking about what happens when they call 911 and nobody shows up. That's pretty important to us. And there are so many jobs that can be done around the fire station that don't require necessarily a lot of physical skills.
That was Steve Hirsch, the chair and director of the National Volunteer Fire Council. Thank you so much for taking some time today.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're narrowing our conversation to Ohio and the state of our own volunteer firefighting forces. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Here in Ohio, 70% of our firefighters are volunteers. They're critical for communities, but the number of people answering the call keeps declining. Our state fire marshal, Kevin Reardon, is sounding the alarm, and he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Kevin.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you for having us on.
I'd like to begin by asking you to give us a lay of the land here in Ohio. Where do we find our volunteer fire departments, and about how many Ohioans live in places that rely upon them exclusively?
Well, you can drive no more than 10 minutes away from any of the major urban areas, whether it's Columbus, Cleveland, Akron, Dayton, anywhere, 10 minutes away from those larger cities. And chances are very good you're going to be served by a volunteer fire department. And that's the way that that structure has been in place for many, many, many decades. Where Ohioans are going to find them, we've got 11.5 million Ohioans. We believe that about 70% of our departments are volunteer in Ohio. So the vast majority of Ohioans outside of the urban areas still are relying on volunteer fire service and volunteer EMS services for their safety.
How would you characterize the current state of those volunteer departments, say, compared to where they were 5, 10, 15 years ago?
We have data that's a few years old that basically indicates that, you know, the number of runs that volunteer fire departments take every year continues to go up, and the number of available volunteers continues to plummet down. We have some departments in Ohio that they have volunteers that are 54 years old, which just happens to be the average age of the volunteer in Ohio. 54 years old is too old to be banging around on a fire truck, but these people are staying as a volunteer in their community because nobody's coming in behind them to replace them.
How big of an issue is recruitment?
Recruitment is huge. In public safety in general, in law enforcement and in fire and in EMS, over the years, recently, we've seen a decline in the level of interest people have in getting involved in public safety. And that continues even worse on the volunteer side. On the career paid side, fire departments are getting people to take their tests and to sign up. They're getting smaller numbers of people, but they're still getting people. On the volunteer side, the issue is they're not getting people to come in to be a volunteer. Those numbers are very, very weak. I just was at a ceremony about 2 weeks ago over in Muskingum County or over in Morgan County for a class of volunteers that was finishing up their 36-hour volunteer training class. In that particular area, that was the first volunteer training class they'd had in 5 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's simply because it took them that long to get enough people to hold a class. So that's the state of where we're at. Now, there's parts of Ohio that are doing very well with volunteer fire departments, but their tax-based structure in those local areas is relatively high and can support it. But they are truly the exception to the rule.
Do you have any theories about why fewer folks are applying?
There's a lot of different reasons why. Time is one of them. Everybody's busy today. And people also don't live where they work. So if you're in a small rural community and you drive from, you know, south of Columbus to Columbus for your job every day, well, you're not available in your rural town to help anybody if you're a volunteer firefighter or EMS professional. You're in Columbus. So that eliminated a lot of people. Some other things that are barriers are potential costs. Some volunteers have to pay for their own training. That can be anywhere between $500 to $1,000. They might have to take and buy their own protective gear. That can be another $3,000 to $4,000. Then they've got recurrent education every 3 years. Not a major obstacle, but it's one more thing for them to do. And then at the end of the day, we're going to take and ask you to take and leave your friends, leave your family or your business to go help somebody in your community at a moment's notice. And last but certainly not least, on a bad day, you could possibly get killed doing your job that pays you nothing. So those are all things that make it hard to attract people to the volunteer fire service. But those are some of the challenges we've got to take and try to work on.
That gets to my next question, because you talked a lot about the costs, and I get the impression that some volunteer departments can cover those costs for their firefighters and others cannot. So how does the financial stability of these departments vary across the state?
I don't think I've seen any of our 1,178 fire departments in Ohio that are funded the same, other than the major urban fire departments. It's a hodgepodge of grants, state money, local money. A lot of volunteer departments, even today in 2024, hold fish fries or sell chicken dinners to raise money to operate the volunteer fire department. And they do it because they need the funds. They need the funds. So funding is that tight in some areas of Ohio.
And it's not just as simple as telling the people of that area, hey, we're going to put a tax on because we've got to take care of this.
It goes far beyond that. It goes far beyond that. And I've had some people say, you know, look, Marshall Reardon, you retired from the city of Columbus. You're a big city guy. Your answer is to probably make everybody a full-time fire department. No, that is not the answer. Tax structures can't support something like that. And oddly enough, we have fire levies statewide that are failing now. I talked to a fire chief a few months ago that had a levy on the recent election. And he said that a couple came up to him after one of his briefings about the levy and told him, we love the fire department. We love what you do, but we simply can't afford to vote for your levy. Things like that have never happened to the fire service in Ohio before. And once again, it shows the stress on everybody that wants a piece of the taxpayer's dollar.
So there's a national statistic that communities save about $46 billion annually due to volunteer fire departments. Do we have any sense of how much is being saved here in Ohio?
We don't right now, but we have a new reporting system that I think over time we'll be able to apply a best estimate to that, probably in a year, year and a half. But the whole point is they don't get paid for anything.
Right.
You know, there are some combination departments in Ohio where they are part paid by the run. But once again, those are the exception to the rule. A pure volunteer fire department, everything is free on part of that volunteer. They don't expect remuneration. And in fact, like I said earlier, sometimes they're actually paying to be a volunteer by paying for their training and paying for their protective gear and everything like that.
So in 2022, Governor Mike DeWine put together a task force and told them to come up with ways to fix the problems that we've been talking about. The group recommended that state lawmakers create a grant program for firefighting gear, give vouchers for training programs, expand the volunteer cadet program. How many of those changes have been made?
We have adopted several of those changes in the current state budget. For the fire marshal's office, we have instituted free training for any volunteer at the Ohio Fire Academy. Now, that takes many different forms. You can come here to our campus in Reynoldsburg and take training on site at our fire academy here. We also deliver training online. We have about 40 online courses that anybody in the fire service is available to eligible to participate in. And we also have a direct delivery program where we can take our instructors to the local area and provide instruction directly at the local level, keeping everybody in place. And that's a very popular program. Some other things we've done, we increased some grant funding. So we have an equipment grant program that went from $700,000 to $2 million in this budget. We increased our Marks Radio grant program from $3.5 million to $4 million this year. And that's a very popular program with volunteers. And here's two good examples of how much need there is. For the equipment grant, we have $2 million available. I believe we received over $8 million worth of requests for that funding. For the Marks Grant Program, which is very popular with volunteer departments, we received a little under $10 million in applications for that funding for $4 million that was available. So the need is clearly there. And we've also instituted some other things. We're going to provide some public service announcements throughout the state that focus on the volunteer need that there exists. And we're going to ask Ohioans to consider stepping up and becoming a volunteer in their community. And we've also added a full-time volunteer firefighter coordinator here at the fire marshal's office that's going to, the first time ever, work with the volunteer fire departments in Ohio to help them recruit and train people, help them do the things that they don't have the ability to do or the time to do. That's what one other obstacle that all volunteers face is the time factor. I get emails from volunteer fire chiefs in the middle of the night. I get phone calls from them in the middle of the night sometimes, because that's when they're working. That's when they've got a chance to catch up on emails. So these are very dedicated, very committed people, and they're struggling. They're struggling.
And if you're a volunteer firefighter here in Ohio and you want to join our conversation, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email allsides@wosu.org. So if there's folks out there listening to this conversation and thinking, you know, I could volunteer in other ways, and this is something that we talked about with Steve Hirsch from the National Volunteer Fire Council. You know, maybe I don't think I have the physicality to go into buildings or do some of the more physical aspects of firefighting. But I, like he said, I'm a retired truck driver and I could definitely drive a fire truck, or I have great clerical skills and I could do your paperwork. Are you looking for those kinds of volunteers too?
A single volunteer fire department in Ohio that would turn anybody away that wanted to help in that way. And you're right. Not everybody can or wants to be a volunteer firefighter. There's training, it's risky, and it's dangerous. So that's not in everybody's wheelhouse. But there are many departments throughout the state that I know chiefs have people in their communities that come up and help them do marketing flyers. They'll take pictures for events. They'll help them with the fish fries, the chicken dinner sales. They'll help in a variety of ways, but they don't get on the fire truck. And there's a lot of ways communities can support their volunteer fire department without becoming a volunteer, because every way that they can help a volunteer fire department, that might free up a volunteer to do something else.
So that might also be a great solution for folks who live in the community but don't work in the community.
Absolutely, because those are services that they can provide anytime.
How has the opioid crisis and the rise in overdoses impacted the work that volunteer departments do? Because they're not just fighting fires. They are often the EMS responders.
Right. EMS is 80 to 90% of any fire department's total run volume, depending on where you're at, 80 to 90%. So that's the most common thing volunteer departments do if they provide EMS. So, I mean, you can imagine as overdoses go up, their runs continue to go up. But you also have to consider a factor on the volunteer side based on where they are in Ohio. They might have a pretty long drive from the home, business, car, whatever, wherever that emergency is taking place. They may have a long drive from that point to get to a hospital with that overdose patient. So that whole time that they're gone, that community is left unprotected unless they have agreements with surrounding communities to back them up when their unit's out of service. But that's just the natural conclusion. As those runs go up and they transport more and more, they're going to be unavailable more and more.
And I imagine it has to be mentally taxing to deal with those kinds of calls day in, day out. It's not easy for anyone, whether you're a career firefighter or a volunteer.
Exactly. I mean, on the career side, it's much worse because those runs are so frequent. They're just so frequent. I mean, if you take a large city in Ohio and imagine how many overdose runs they have a day, that's fatiguing on the EMS providers. It really is. It's fatiguing on the entire health system. But sadly, that's just where we are right now in society.
When it comes, is there any plan to increase the number of career firefighters, or do you sort of expect we're always going to need to rely on volunteers?
We're always going to have to rely on volunteers. It's a model that's worked for a long time, but right now it's struggling because of the financial pressures. The pressure on that tax dollar that everybody has, that pressure is so intense. Like I said earlier, we have people not voting for levies because they can't afford it. And the fire service has never had that problem before. Whether you're full-time or career paid department, we've never had that problem before, and now that is a problem. So once again, there comes a point where a fire chief has a primary responsibility to put boots on the ground, people on the street, people to come help you whenever you call. when they reach a point where financially they have to reduce those numbers or reduce the services, Ohioans will feel that. And we have some full-time departments in Ohio right now that are rotating the closure of some stations because they don't have the adequate staffing.
Or they won't do 24-hour staffing.
Right. It's 24-hour staffing. So when they have to close a station in a local neighborhood, the other surrounding stations have to come into that area. So response is longer. You know, saving lives is a direct reflection of response time. The faster we can get there, the faster we can save lives.
Final question, just to reiterate, if someone is interested in volunteering, what is the website that we go to?
I would ask everybody to go to our website, which is com.ohio.gov/fire.
Great. And then they can find information and get connected with their local volunteer department.
Absolutely.
That was Kevin Reardon, the state fire marshal. Thank you so much for your time today, sir.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're shrinking our scale even further, dropping down from a statewide view to the perspective of one local volunteer fire chief in southwestern Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Volunteer firefighters provide a critical service in many of Ohio's smaller communities, responding to emergencies and lowering response times in places that cannot afford to pay for a career firefighting force. But recruitment is getting harder as calls and the cost of training continue to go up. John Finley is the chief of the Malta and McConnellsville Volunteer Fire Department. He also sits on the board of the Ohio Fire Council, and he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, John.
Thank you.
How has your fire department changed during the time that you have been there?
Well, I've been there for 44 plus years.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's changed drastically, really. I joined the EMS service as a EMT in 1976, and I joined officially on the fire department in 1980, although the EMTs at that time was allowed to fight fire, but you had to be 21 to be a volunteer firefighter and a voting member. So it took a little bit for me to go from the 18 age to 21 before I became a voting member. And in 1980, I was voted in as an active member of the fire department. And at that time, we had 35 to 40 members. The membership was more military-like, if you will, run like a military operation, it seemed, and also had a waiting list to get members. Today, you don't have a waiting list. Our membership is about 21 people. We don't have a waiting list at all. And it's really, really hard to get anyone to commit to be a volunteer firefighter for the dedication and the discipline it takes to do so. And it seems like now there's both members of the family that are leading the family work, and nobody is available during the day as much as there used to be. So that's really a struggle for us as well.
One of the things we've heard throughout this hour is that people increasingly do not work where they live. Has that been a problem for you in terms of recruitment?
It has. In our small town of McConnellsville and our sister village across the river, Malta, we used to have a lot of local businesses that would support the fire department with allowing their employees to go to a fire. And there was a lot more businesses that had that availability back then. Some of the businesses today don't have enough employees to do so. And there's not near as many that work in town locally that used to be available at a minute's notice. So that's created a real challenge for us.
And you can't just simply go to the local community and say, hey, I'd like to pass a tax to make us a career fire department and pay people to do this work.
No, that would be an impossibility for our small villages and the townships surrounding us. We serve several townships, including both villages, within our jurisdiction of what we serve. And all are rural, all are of a lower income, it seems. And it's really hard for people to pay the taxes they have to pay now, let alone the major increase it would take to provide a professional service to the area.
So calls are increasing across Ohio, across the country. You know, the opioid crisis increases calls to EMS. And you have fewer volunteers who can respond. Does that ever keep you up at night, like that worry about response times?
It sure does. And again, with the people living farther and farther away from the village or working farther away from the village, that also affects our response times. And, you know, at times you really worry about, can we get a truck out the door? And we've been very fortunate in our department that we're able to respond within 3 to 5 minutes. But so many departments out there are not that fortunate today.
How is your department down there in McConnellsville? How is it funded? Is it like, are you doing fish fries or is there a tax?
We do all sorts of things to help fund the department. We passed some tax levies several years ago now in our local areas that we serve. So, for instance, in the village of McConnellsville, there's a small tax levy that generates money for us, and we contract with the village of McConnellsville to provide fire service for the village. And that's where we get our funding. We also have special fund drives. We have a gun raffle, and we used to have a steak fry. We have a chicken barbecue in the summertime and several other fundraisers that we do. But again, that takes a lot of time from our members to do all that and commit their weekends, commit their holidays and things like that to the fire department to do these fundraisers. And it gets very difficult, especially for families with young children.
The Columbus Dispatch recently did a story about the statewide shortage, and they started with this incredibly tragic story over in Fayette County where a volunteer fire chief was trying to save money. And so he borrowed an extended lift from a farmer to put this windsock on a radio tower so that helicopters could land in the area. And both him and another person were essentially ejected from that lift and died, and they were just trying to save money. That's got to be such a scary story for the rest of you here in Ohio.
Yes, it is. The lift they were in actually fell over, and the two perished. It was a very tragic story, and you know, left that community in a big void for their service. And we do things like that here in our fire department. We painted our own firehouse. We do our own cleaning and our own repairs when we can. We had a member fall off of a ladder one time and severely damaged or severely injured him, I should say. And it took him many months to a few years to recover. So we've experienced that. Fortunately, we didn't lose that member. He survived the accident. But, you know, we've experienced similar things, maybe not quite as tragic, but there's always a risk in everything that we do, let alone working on our own station and doing our own repairs.
Yeah, and it's not like you get, workers' compensation for those kinds of injuries.
Well, we are covered by workers' comp.
Oh, you are?
That's an expensive thing in itself. We have to pay for that, of course. And then when we have an injury, our workers' comp goes up. So our members are covered by workers' compensation, but that's very expensive for the department.
So that's something you guys have to buy in addition to all your gear.
We do.
What can the state do, or what would you want the state to do to better support you?
Wow, that's a tough question. That's a really tough question. You know, you always expect other people to help and take care of all your problems. But, you know, the state is working hard. I know our governor, Mike DeWine, has been very, very helpful in creating a volunteer fire task force, which I was fortunate as one of the members in the state of Ohio to be appointed to that board. And it was a privilege and an honor to serve. But we've worked very, very hard to try to make recommendations to the legislature. They haven't agreed with all the recommendations that we've made, but we're hoping they'll keep considering things, because any one thing that we can do to help volunteerism and help volunteers in Ohio would be most helpful. If we can just receive a few extra volunteers out of some simple efforts that we could do, tax credits, for instance, for people that would volunteer for so many years, or some kind of a special insurance fund. Anything could help. Sorry, my radio is going off in the background here.
I was like, I hope it's not an emergency.
It is, but it's an EMS emergency, so we've got staff on hand to take care of the ambulance run.
Well, that's good. You know, how difficult is it to maintain your equipment as well as upgrade your equipment? Are you guys funding grant money, all that kind of stuff?
It's extremely difficult. We try for grant money, but being a small volunteer fire department, sometimes it's really hard to get that grant. They tell us we don't need grant writers, but because we don't use grant writers, a lot of times we don't get the grants. That makes it even more difficult. That is a really big problem today. We ordered a truck well over a year and a half ago to replace a 21-year-old truck we had in our department. And we was just notified last week, actually, that truck's going to be a year and a half late on delivery.
Wow.
Really hurting us not having that truck.
A year and a half late? That's a heck of a delay.
It really is.
Is
and
that
that's a problem
common?
In our service today. It has become common since COVID.
Oh, my goodness.
It has really been a challenge for us. And to give you another challenge, price of the truck that we bought 21 years ago was about $430,000. The same exact truck that we specified today to replace it in a new truck was $1,150,000.
Oh, that's a big increase.
Yes, and fire equipment has increased just nearly as bad. Your fire coats, your fire pants, your fire boots, your gloves, your hoods, your helmets, and your air packs, which all consist of what one firefighter needs, each of those to work on a fire, is all went way, way up in price as well. I can remember 10 years ago, an air pack probably cost less than $2,000. Today, they're more than $7,000 to $8,000.
So you guys have been hit by inflation just like everybody else.
In a really bad way.
Yeah, it sounds that way. So then it sounds like if somebody was a grant writer or if they couldn't be a firefighter in your district, but perhaps they had experienced grant writing, it sounds like you would happily take their volunteerism.
We sure would. Sometimes counties have grant writers that help and things, and our county does as well, but they're so busy, it's really hard for them to take extra time. Plus, they don't understand the fire part of it. You know, the firefighting and the business that we're in is really different.
We only have about a minute left. Do you have any final thoughts or something you'd like folks maybe listening here in Columbus to understand about volunteer firefighting?
I think one of the biggest things people need to understand is they need to support their volunteer firefighters. They go through a lot. They see a lot. maybe a lot of things they shouldn't see at times, because, you know, their emotional state today is very difficult. It's much like military operations. You know, we see a lot of death. We see a lot of destruction. We're going out when someone's having probably the worst day of their life and trying to help them. We're running into buildings when everybody else is running out. And it seems like the support for volunteer firefighters aren't what it is today as it used to be 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And it's severely lacking of that support sometimes, and or understanding from the community.
That was John Finley, the chief of the Malta and McConnellsville Fire Department. Thank you so much for your time today, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. That'll do it for this hour of All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.